What's happening? What's happening? What's happening, blues peoples? Yeah, we're literally just about 2 minutes early, and that's okay. Okay, be happy that we're early and that we're not late. Welcome to the Jack Dapper Blues Heritage Radio Show, and you're gonna see my guests real soon. But first, we got to get a couple of things out of the way. First, I want to shout out the Black Bottom Acoustic Blues and Phil Holler Festival honoring Sylvester Weaver. This is our first time doing this. Jack Dapper Blues and the Sikh Museum and Mr. Michael Golf, a resident blues musician, together we are throwing this. And it's imperative right now because right now, specifically in October, but right now marks the 100th year anniversary of the first blues song by Sylvester Weaver and Sarah Martin that solidifies country blues the way we know it. So be sure to donate, come out in Russellville, Kentucky, and check us out. Next. You know I got to shout out the show. Just so you know what the Jack Dapper Blues Heritage Preservation Foundation does, we are a focal point for researching, archiving, and raising awareness of Black American traditional music, folk art, folk life, folklore, and the Black experience through media and the collected repository. Our broadcasting services provide coverage and conversations on the blues people by tackling sensitive topics related to the past and present events and expressions. I say expressions because sometimes we don't speak about sensitive topics. We may just speak about the traditional expression, the music, the food, right? Our primary business goal is to run a solid foundation with a significant social impact. Next, I know y'all want this. The African American Folklorist furthers the mission of Jack Dapper Blues by publishing articles discussing the evolution of our traditions and presenting research about blues people. We include interviews with and articles from musicians, historians, ethnographers, community scholars, and academics who specialize in and are enthusiastic about the Black American experience. We also have a department, a chapter, a section called Emerging Folklorists, where children from age 10 to young adults age 24 and adults who feel they're not necessarily folklorists submit great writings and works. Now, for what's really important, yes, I'm going to not even say anything. I'm just going to bring her on the screen because right now I have the honor to speak to Sister Hannah Marie. What's happening?
Hey, it's so good to be here with you today.
Thank you so much. I know that was a lot. I'm sorry you had to sit through all that.
Oh, no. I'm so glad because I'm constantly learning from you and I'm constantly like just picking up on what it is that you're dropping.
I appreciate that. So what you're going to be dropping right now, and I'm going to learn from you, and we're going to learn about Hannah. And I want to know, because, you know, you have a great voice, singing voice. I mean,
thank you.
A great singing voice. And I've witnessed your hammer clawing, which is quite impressive. So I would like to start with your introduction, because on so many levels, you're doing something extremely traditional, but it's extremely contemporary how you present it, but we don't lose that tradition. What introduced you to it first and foremost?
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for just giving me the platform to talk about my own experience. And I pretty much was introduced to the banjo just through the instrument itself. As a multi-instrumentalist, as somebody who played other instruments and didn't have the knowledge or the access to the banjo until more or less being a young adult, it was the instrument itself. Just being able to have the ability to be holding the instrument and just witnessing somebody playing it, I was like very struck always, and had a knowing inside of me that it was different. It was different than other instruments that I had played. And that's definitely still something that I really identify with. And it's, I mean, I'll be honest. I prefer five strings to six solely just because there's less strings. Like that's just, that's, if that says anything about me, you know, the guitar is a very complicated instrument.
Is it really?
I'm on that journey with the guitar as well, because I played the guitar before I played the banjo. And I think just being able to not only like learn that particular technique that I do play and have adapted for myself and teach to people, just having that understanding of where that comes from. The fact of that specific, the things that make the banjo unique are all the things that are passed down from ancestors who have been on this landmass, people who have been, you know, calling North America and Turtle Island home for a long time, as well as people in West Africa who have birthed the technology around instrumentation, the techniques, and the ways of actually building instruments that we know to this day. So really just crediting the ancestors for bringing me into the fold, and just for allowing me to participate.
So I had a question to ask you, but your last statement totally made me pivot. You know, my call to the blues was literally the ancestors visited and spoke and told me this is what you're supposed to be doing. And I get an inclination you have, if not similar, you're in that group of people that have this connection. That's what I'm kind of hearing. So is it a fair statement that this was a higher power, a spiritual? Did they communicate with you? Are they still? Is that too personal?
I think it's a fair question. I absolutely do. And I think that like my personal opinion is that I attribute everything to spirit. That I wouldn't be here without spirit. I don't think that anything would be here. Their spirit is what is holding and bringing all of the things together. And like, obviously there's so many different kinds of spirits.
Right.
And like for me, that's really alive with the plant world. And that's one of the ways that the banjo has spoken to me, through the connection to the trees, the connection to the gourd, the connection to the goat. All of those spirits have been very, very present in my life. And even when I haven't been playing even when I'm playing a modern banjo, there's all of these elements that still come and are derived from, you know, the shape of the body of the instrument to just the strings and the vibration that connects me with a lot of different kinds of spirit. I'm currently like carrying the life of a spirit that hasn't been born yet. And there's so much communication that's constantly happening, you know, for me through music and through the different channels that come through music. So I definitely, you know, and also just you know, my previous ancestors, ones that I've met, ones that I have not met. There's a lot of music that has run through my family. So there's different ways that those songs and those traditions come through that I'm just really grateful to, you know, once again, just be investigating and being curious about, and just finding solace in as part of my life and part of my art making and part of my organizing and just part of the relationships that are kind of being built even in this moment, you know, speaking and being heard by people and talking to you, like, just definitely grateful to be in that situation.
Likewise, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Miss Hannah Mae Reed, and we're going into it, hopefully. Well, you've mentioned that you are a multi-instrumentalist and that you've been playing other instruments prior to the banjo. Care to share those instruments?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that the voice and rhythm are like the primary instruments that are the most innate. And so those have always felt really innate to me. My mother is a string instrumentalist. And so I wasn't really into string instruments as a child, but I did play the piano, you know, obviously a string and percussion type instrument. But yeah, I wasn't really playing string instruments until I was a little bit older. And that's kind of what I've been more gravitated toward these days. Like I said, playing guitar before banjo, definitely getting to play a bit of the fiddle. But those are still all, those are all journeys that I'm on right now. I have always loved the bass. And that's
upright bass or?
Just an acoustic bass that I can also amplify, but also play like next to a fire with no amplification. And I don't know if that will eventually, you know, translate into the upright bass. But I've always really just had a thing for bass lines, and that's definitely a direction that I, now that I've kind of been settled, I had a lot of, I would just say, rambling in my day. And I'm not doing that anymore. And those are the types of things that have made it so I didn't have access to like having more instruments or having more space for instruments. And so I feel the bass coming through really hard right now. That's just a personal development, but yeah, it's always been there. And that's similar with the banjo. Like I played the banjo before I had my own instrument. That's just how it works. Like, you don't always have access to those things, but you get your hands on it and you just do what you can. And then that's going to still become part of you, you know, until eventually you do have that more of an opportunity.
So I would like to understand how you receive, look at, and then express music. And the reason why I ask it to you that way is based on something you said before we went live, how you wish to experience the banjo. And it was like on multiple levels. And I was like, wow, like, sister is deep. What is this? You gotta, please explain this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm sort of looking for some clarity in your question. But I guess what sort of comes to mind is just that, like, I think that the traditional way of playing music is just, yeah, you're a person, you got your instrument, you have it, maybe there's other people there, you have that face-to-face, body-to-body, like vibration-to-vibration interaction. And I think, you know, that's often done around a sacred fire or at like a body of water. And that's a whole experience. That's a super important experience. And also living in the modern world, we also have these other avenues of like music production. and other digital ways of recording and this kind of thing. So, and there's, you know, there's a whole history of recording. And it's, it just expands it. And I've really enjoyed that myself, just in terms of exploring production, exploring sound, exploring genre, like having those different things allows you to do so much. There's a lot of freedom in the choices to do that. So I think it's just, there's no box for it, but there's so many definitions that we can create with our own personal music.
So speaking of genre, right? So you have a song, you have many songs, but one song I'm speaking of, because it has the essence of all traditions, from the playing to the vocal phrasing to how you use vocals dynamically and softly, Shower, right? Are you a old-time artist? Are you, where do you classify yourself as an artist, performer, and the like?
Yeah, like, once again, I think it's a great question, a fair question. I definitely have really appreciated the old-time genre, particularly, as I said before, like the roots of that being so much older than what we consider old time, feeling that really strongly. And also, I guess from my take on it is that I'm really inspired by Afrofuturism. I'm inspired by us being a living tradition. I think that, for me, I'm holding both like a certain level of historical accuracy, to honor traditions, like, and understand those in an academic sense or in just a historical sense. But also not being contained by that as well. Like, I think there's a big piece of honoring that we can do with that, and learning songs from previous masters across the globe, and seeing how far those genres have gone around, and also just being present with what is actually coming through now. And like I've sort of said, I want to create from that place, of experimentation, of play, and of fun, and of just continuing those traditions in the ways that they look and feel and sound now.
Right. Because I don't know if I said it when we was off air, if I said it on air, but you do have, excuse me, a strong contemporary feel in your music without, changing or losing the traditional vibe. Is that intentional, or you're just, because you're in the now, that's just how it comes out?
Yeah. As far as intention, I think that does change, but I think that the intention has always just been to honor what's coming through now. Yeah.
So I want to, as you can see, I'm jotting some notes down, and you mentioned the ancestors, you mentioned spirit, but what kind of takes it all the way home for me is you made it really clear. Even when you were talking about the different entities that you vibe with, you mentioned playing by the fire, playing by the water. These are real sacred places with sacred, I use this word loosely because it means something different to everybody, but sacred rituals, right? What does it mean to you to either play, sing, or just have experiences whether it's around a fire or by the water.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a few different intersections, I think, at this question. Like, the question of ritual kind of, it overlaps with the conversation around performance. And then ritual also really overlaps with the conversation about what does that mean to be truly community building and being in right relationship with the people that we're able to create and share with. You know, like, we're not living in a vacuum. We're like inside of a silo. Like, there's so many people who witness us. And I think that is just important to name, that creating community, especially in the ways like that we have done through the Black Banjo Reclamation Project, you know, have been super crucial and just continue to be at the center of my work and of my organizing. And as far as performance, I did start off doing a lot of busking and then sort of pivoting that into more formal sort of performances. And I have not really considered myself as a performer. I continue to grow into my artistry and like get support around that to continue crafting that and defining that. But, you know, there's a really large conversation around what is performance and what is ritual, and what is the purpose that the performance is serving, you know, whether that's like as entertainment, or are we all actually participating? Like, we're all a witness. We're all part of something that's happening that has the ability to change us and have us have a more of a common understanding. So I haven't really considered myself a performer. I think that it is also can a lot of times be associated with like minstrelsy, and the ways that we're not able to be fully authentic in what we present. And I think that that's what it is for me, is just wanting to be authentic in what it is, the things that I'm sharing.
So, you know, I love that answer, because it was there's a lot to unpack, but it hit to what I was asking you. Also, it hits to community, right? And it hits to this reciprocal relationship between the collective and the vibe. Right. And I say that because what I received from your answer is you're of the folk. Is that a fair assessment?
Personally, that is a really big thing that I think is part of folk music. I think for me as a performer, it's made me feel more separate from community. Like, I haven't, as much as I've gotten to share with community through those things, particularly being a folk music performer, I think that put me in a lot of situations where the audiences were not Black people. And for me, a lot of my goal with this music has been connecting with Black people. And so I think that I've had to take my work outside of a performance venue in order to be able to connect in the ways that have made sense for me, and the collaborations that have felt like they were really helping to build something of that is part of a larger liberatory movement that touches on and acknowledges all of the things that Black people are going through in the world today. From our oppression, from our empowerment, from the ways that we're healing, from the ways that we're relating to each other and talking to each other, like actually having real communication, having a sense of bravery around addressing those things. Like, we don't have to, my situation has just always been that there's, you know, there's always a way to move forward. And there's different ways that we can work together that vary, but you know, that's a lot of, you know, we hear a lot about like cancel culture and stuff these days, and it's like, we're all going to be connected regardless. There's right. No such thing as canceling. It doesn't exist.
Right.
So being real about that, being real about this Black community, like as what you've said, is not a monolith, which many of us have said, and we come from all over the diaspora. We have different experiences. We have different color skin. We have different hair texture. We have different ancestors and different experiences, and finding ways within that level of diversity amongst Black folks to actually be able to have healing experiences together that are actually breaking outside of what has been perpetuated onto us and what has been done to us, and actually reaching farther back to the wisdom that has existed for so much longer than that, that is still very alive in so many people in the spirit of collaboration.
Right.
You know, right. That didn't go anywhere.
Right, right, right. So then, you know what? I think it's time that you share with us this project and group that you created and co-founded, and what's its significant, its significance, excuse me, in the a world of healing, reconnecting Black folk to what's theirs, but that healing process in doing so. Please share.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for that invitation. Yeah, the Black Banjo Reclamation Project. It's something that is just so near and dear to me. And I think for me, it speaks to the fact that, you know, as just my soul sister, Brandy Mack, is always saying, that we go fast alone and far together, and essentially that, like, any one of us, like all of us, we have the option to say, I actually want to do this by myself. I want to, respectively, like, we can go on by ourselves and we can do this work. And for me, that's where I started. I feel like I think so many people who have been part of like spreading and holding Black banjo culture, it's been like a personal thing. It's been with family, it's been with friends. And for me, after being able to experience that in the ways that I was having a sense that it was so much bigger than like it being this small, like more of a siloed group of people or a siloed experience. Because I guess I just found that the more that this was talked about, the more that we were having access to information, it just activates something within people, and it turns different things on within people. Like it's just being able to have this larger conversation amongst more people that's like actively bringing folks into something that they're able to engage with in a very hands-on way that brings levity to ideas that sort of seem kind of ethereal at times. I think that with even the title, the Black Banjo Reclamation Project, the reclamation part for me feels like it's really as a communal effort. because, you know, there's so many people who they're not reclaiming the banjo. They're already carriers of those traditions. They're not reclaiming something necessarily. And I respect that, you know, but I'm even noticing that in the work, just to kind of even expand the conversation even more across the diaspora, the work of Daniel Jatta that he has done as a scholar in the Gambia, that's something that was taught to him by his father. But at the same time, they are doing a lot of efforts that have been very paralleled with the work that we're doing, where we are actually wanting to do that work inside of our communities. And that's what they're doing in the Gambia at the Akonting Center currently. And that's the work that they're moving forward with, which is that it's not just about me. It's about other people in my community being able to have the opportunity to learn and to grow in these ways. And so for me, that has been a lot through actually playing music, actually learning music, actually being able to touch an instrument. Like, that's even a huge barrier for a lot of people, to not have an instrument, to not, you know, part of that also is like Black folks wanting to learn from Black people, Black traditions.
Right.
That there are a lot of folks who just are like, I'm not going to go on YouTube and watch white people teach me how to play banjo. They're just not willing to do it. And I get it. And that's, you know, part of the work that we move forward is around teaching and educating in that way. The other, you know, a really big aspect of what we have done, which has been it after doing workshops around music and actually distributing banjos so that people could actually have their own instrument, it really started transforming naturally into, wow, what about building them? Because this is a traditional skill. And not only that, but that knowledge has been ingrained from our relationship with the earth for so many different generations. Even like the tradition of woodworking, the tradition of crafting, like these are all parts of what has been passed down to us. And it's been a reclamation for many of us to say, like in my personal experience, like I am somebody who was socialized as female. And that meant for me that I wasn't going to have access to somebody being like, oh, these are tools. Like, you can make stuff. Like, that just was never part of my life. And so for me, that was part of my own reclamation, where it's like, I have to reclaim this because I don't have somebody just giving me access to it. And so like being able to go out and say like, yeah, I actually want to do this, and I want to make it possible for other people who have been in a situation like me to do that. That also has to do with the way that we're looking at the banjo in its land base and understanding. I mean, there's a lot of reclamation around how we identify in indigeneity. So whether that's as having an understanding of Black African people as indigenous to land, Africa, there's also on the other side of that, because so many of us have been here on Turtle Island for longer than slavery existed, you know, we're not everybody is, we're also identifying with the indigeneity of being native to here as well. Many of us are. So there's a reclamation around the narratives that we're able to share with each other. And that goes as well for the spirituality, that, you know, it has to do with a certain level of, you know, many Black folks having an experience within Judeo-Christian religion and being able to say, you know, what is it that I want to take from this? What is it that I maybe don't want to take from this? And what parts of that are actually coming from African spirituality or something that is land-based or something that is older? Like, there's so many ideas around reclamation that just having the opportunity to explore that is huge. is paramount, and that's something that, like, I will absolutely, you know, credit myself and my team for bringing so many of those narratives forward and bringing so many actions that are allowing us to keep being in questioning and keep having conversations with people who are doing such amazing work like yourself to keep spreading knowledge. And like, you know, that for me, it all goes back to what you had mentioned as well around healing, which is like, not waiting for someone else to do that work for you and taking on that empowerment of learning and understanding ourselves, because we have had a lot done to us. So part of that healing is understanding like that the trauma that we have maybe experienced isn't us. And it's, there's nothing, my personal opinion is that there's just nothing that we can't heal from. And that a lot of the things that I'm saying are part of those healing modalities, you know, because music is a somatic experience. It does have those vibrations that are actually echoing through us. But also these like liberatory lenses that we've gotten from so many Black feminists and people who have brought like a living viability of love and care, like politics of care, into our lives. And really just my work has been weaving and incorporating a lot of these ideas together so that we can actually say, this does actually have to do with the banjo and does actually have to do with my art form and my life, all of those things.
Right. I think it's amazing because you, you know, and one of the discrepancies that I have with outside folks participating, but yet, let me rephrase that, interpreting what they participate in, that has to do with our tradition and culture. And it's not all, right? But the ones that I've had, I guess, debates with, or ones that I've read or what have you, is there's this idea that the instrument, the experience, the individual human being, and all these things are separate and is quantified by a particular note and how it's played, which that is very important. But from what I gather from you, we kind of have the same belief in the fact that that note, that rhythm, that phrase is saying, played that way because of the experience, right? So ultimately, you're pretty much saying that the banjo reclamation project is more than just identifying that all these things come together when I sit down with this, and we just and this goes into folk art, right? Because you mentioned carving, you know, which is something, you know, all these different things seem to be out of reach for Black folk, but it's not, because it's been in our families for years. It just depends on where you migrated to. And again, I like how you word that, what you have access to. So now I'm going to ask the question, I'm off my soapbox. If you will, share with us your team and what are some of the programs and projects that you all are working with? And what community are you doing this in?
Yeah, that's a great question. So me personally, I am born and raised in California. And I personally recognize, you know, I see the West Coast as a pretty far reaches of diaspora. Like, it is not in any way the center or the epicenter of Black culture. I think that, in general, people in California tend to think that they're at the center of the world. I don't believe that that is the case. I've had the privilege to really travel a lot, and so, like, I've had those firsthand experiences of being able to see more of where Black music comes from. Because while there is so much of it that develops everywhere in diaspora, you know, more of where you are, more parts in the eastern part of Turtle Island are definitely where there are deep, deep roots and deep riches. That's where I trace my family back to as well, Florida. As you know, so many folks who are part of diaspora in the north and the west, all of that, there's a, you know, a solid understanding of where it is that so much of our history and culture does come from is the south. And that's yeah, what I attribute culturally for myself, and that coming from other places, the continent and the Caribbean specifically. And yeah, I also acknowledge that, like, this project really, you know, I've been living in California after having those experiences away, and I did return to the West Coast eventually and settle in Oakland, which is where my family migrated to a few generations ago. I am actually from Sacramento myself. And so there's just, you know, because I've been like leading this project, there's been like a big epicenter of like the energy I've put out, like in the Bay Area and whatnot, connecting with folks in this area. But there has been collaborations that have happened all over the country at this point. So at this point, it's been very organic the way that we have been developing, in terms of just like wanting to see consistency and just stability in the way that we're able to share. And so, yeah, over the last few years, there has been several projects that have happened in the Bay Area. So that's been just workshops. I've led a cohort of folks who were able to receive banjos, and we met really consistently throughout the winter of 2021, I think. Was that 2000? I can't remember if that was last year. Maybe that was 2022. Losing track of it, you know, all the time. But we've also had a few projects that have happened in Chicago. We have also just like really desired to spread that out as well throughout, you know, into the Northeast, into the Southeast. And so like, there's a lot that has been going on just even in the last year or so with connecting with communities in those regions. And it's like acknowledging capacity, acknowledging that it takes a lot of resources to travel. We've also just wanted to put a lot of our work online and make it accessible that way too. But I think, yeah, our bread and butter has been really holding space in person, for us to come together, whether that's to build a banjo, to have the experience of like learning about the banjo through building one. You know, I work really closely with Sule Greg Wilson, who lives in Arizona. So like more folks in the West, it's definitely been a lot of different amazing people who are holding it down in different places. My job has been to continue to connect and support those projects in happening, and creating like the resources to do so. A big component of what we do does also lead back to economics and the actual self-determination of what does it take to create an organization that can sustain itself. So we've been really inspired by the movement of cooperatives and have been like moving in directions as much as possible of just sort of collectivizing and working in collaboration, because quite frankly, that is how you get more things done. That is how you can have the work be just to be present in different places. And so I've really enjoyed collaborating with different people. And it has really mostly worked out really well. So, you know, we've still had to work on a pretty like insular level. We haven't had the capacity to just have like these really big events or anything like that. But that's why I feel like it's just an invitation to kind of tap in with us, especially like, you know, wherever that you live. There's a huge economic component to this when it comes to, you know, we work inside of a nonprofit industrial complex as well. We have a fiscal sponsor. People are very, very welcome to make donations to the Black Banjo Reclamation Project, but we also have offerings that we have available. So we are actually in this mutual exchange with folks. And if you do check out our website and you do check out like the donate and you look at our page on Open Collective, who is our fiscal sponsor, you'll be able to actually see if, hey, maybe I actually want to be a sponsor. Maybe I want to be a member. And that's really, we've made it really accessible with like different tiers. So there are folks who we really just want, we want to be able to share resources with. And so we have made that barrier really low. There are also a lot of folks who like don't come from the culture that created banjos. And that's also an invitation to be more in reciprocity and actually support and not have as much of an extractive relationship with Black folks around our music, that we really want to be respected in the spaces that we're holding for each other to, you know, a lot of healing happens when we have that space. So that's kind of what we've been creating. And like I said, doing that as well online. And we do have a small event that's happening online. It's going to be on June 3rd. This is coming up really soon. And it's just called Roots All Over the World, just coming together and acknowledging this work that's happening in many different ways in many different places, but all with a certain level of cohesion, with us together and bringing our gifts together to actually grow the abundance of what we have. Like, we do have, you know, expenses that we want to be able to cover. We want to be able to continue. We're going to continue doing this work regardless. But like, as we are shifting into more sustainable models that will support ourselves and not just require this sort of idea of philanthropy, because philanthropy, you know, has these roots that have to do with charity, and that's not what this is about. It's about, do you actually identify with this? Because if you do, we want you to be a part of it. We want to be in this together. Rather than, it's not about like, I'm going to help the Black people, or like, it's not about us being like, we're going to save the white people from their own racism. Like, that's not going to happen. But there's a lot of love that's being put into this project that I feel and that I also give. So that's just an invitation to kind of be in relationship with us in like ways that we're all figuring out how to be in right relationship about.
So I have to ask you, I wanted to ask you another question, but your last statement kind of triggered something, not in a bad way, but inspired is a better word, mm-hmm. right? The banjo is a really racialized instrument, right? And it's a racialized instrument. You mentioned economic and social community, how this is, you know, some of the work that you guys do. Mm-hmm. It also represents a space in the social class as well, which started on one spectrum and kind of went to another. Are these things, do you address these things? How do you feel about these things? Just go with your answer. I want it to be general because I want to hear what you got to say.
Yeah. I think you know, I'm still learning about as far as even in an indigenous setting, you know, I'm doing my own work in exploration, just like organically over time, especially like I would love to visit the Akonting Center, for example, in the Gambia at some point, because I want to learn more firsthand from those folks about the role that that instrument plays in their society and the ways that those people are seen and regarded. And I think in this country, in this setting, like I mentioned the history of recording, you know, one thing that we are aware of is that Black folks have held the knowledge of making a banjo. I myself and like one of my other collaborators, Patrice, we've been doing a lot of exploring of like actually making an entire instrument totally by hand. And that has, I won't go into too much about that right now, but there's just been so much that I have felt in that process where I was just like, wow, like just feeling the dedication, feeling what somebody actually have had to go through to make that instrument available to themselves. And just also so incredibly grateful for the gourds that have been able to make their way here and just be present here so that we could continue that tradition. And that essentially that is an indigenous practice, even with having a flat fretboard. Okay, maybe that can be traced to Europe. You know, maybe that's the case in a scholarly setting.
I can't tell you.
I don't care. I don't care, actually. And so, like, really, like that. Yeah, and that is why people are saying this is a diasporic instrument. This is Pan-African, and that's true because you're not going to find the exact banjo on the continent. But what it has become is that white people never seen, heard of, had anything to do with the banjo until colonization. And that's their tie to the instrument. Period. Like, there's no record that I know of where white people even have anything to do with gourd instrument. Like, it's not culturally relevant to white people. And so my, you know, take on the history of it has just been that essentially that slowly gained some traction as white people were colonizing Black folks and Black culture and inserting themselves in places that they just quite frankly didn't belong and were not invited to. Was an unconsensual mashup of cultures. And essentially that was eventually commodified. So that was always commodified really, because you know, you hear about these stories of that was when you hear about white cultures going to the coast of wherever Black people were, they were pillaging and actually taking those instruments, those instruments that are in Europe, those instruments that they have in the museums. They, you know, you have to wonder, how did they actually get this? Because this is through like war, and fact check me on this, do whatever you want, but this shit was not consensual,
right?
And like, it just wasn't freely given. And so all that to say that it's always been, however you want to say, fetishized or valued on a level that wasn't respecting humanity. And like we have said, you're not respecting where this comes from. You just think it's cool. You think it sounds cool. And that is the history of white people playing the banjo until they decide to make another culture that's healing that lineage. That's what they have. And so that went into the more modern times, that went into industrialization, that went into actually manufacturing banjos on a larger scale, selling them. How much money has been made? How much wealth hoarding has been made possible through the banjo for white people? These are the real questions that I have that I'm gonna definitely bring up because it's an economic issue. And it has created wealth in this country the same way that Black people created wealth through all these other ways that has been taken and stolen and used to further oppress. Something that is sacred to us, whether that, you know, that's, this has happened with our relationship with the land. Taking something that is has always been sacred for us and giving Black people trauma around those things. So that when we talk about it being healing and we talk about being trauma informed, this is kind of what we're talking about here. It's not an abstract thing. We're people who are walking around with trauma. And if we don't realize that, if we don't understand that, we're definitely liable to act as the oppressor or to allow that trauma to really just continue going out into the world instead of to come to recognition of what needs to change around that those relationships. And so, yeah, there is a very deep racialized relationship that people have with the banjo. And like I had mentioned, like we do absolutely invite people from all backgrounds to be part of this project, because at the end of the day, in this country, everyone is affected by this and everyone has had their hand in it in some way. And that's why we center Black people and Blackness in this experience, because we have actually been the folks taking the brunt of that. And, you know, that is why we create affinity spaces and the information. Like, we take the liberty to say, I want to share these particular things in a Black space because this is who is asking for and this is who is being centered in the work that we're doing. And then we also create space outside of that and in conjunction with that so that we can also have healing actions come out of, you know, the white lineages and lineages of other people of color. And especially with other people of color, it's really important to acknowledge the history that folks of many different descents have to like the gourd instrument and the ways that there can be a lot of like just understanding and sort of like love and trust built around what we're doing in terms of folk music. And like understanding in terms of white folks too, the ways that we've taken on white supremacy is part of our, the ways that we act so that we can actually dismantle that and to separate ourselves and be an example for white people to continue to separate themselves from the oppression that they tend to perpetuate, especially when they're not aware of these type of dynamics.
Right. I get it. I'm with you. And you know, it's kind of ironic, and some Black people listening might get mad at me, but there are Black people who perpetuate white supremacy as well. But has nothing to do with anything.
No, it's like, go ahead, say that. It's important to understand that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I just want to, I'm not going to hold you too much longer, but something you said earlier kind of flashed by me as you were sharing just now. And folk music, without going through all the historical ethnomusicologists that attributed folk music to Black folk, I want to ask you, because you made mention to the space of folk music has been dominated, if you will, by white people, but it's black, it's white, it's Latinx, it is of the folk, right? It's not a fair question to ask you, how did it get removed? I guess the question would be, is there a way to reintroduce this concept to black folk and kind of introduce to white folk, hey, you don't have a corner on this because the folk are many people, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would be remiss to just to not acknowledge like just how much gatekeeping has happened. Whether that's that you have banjos that are behind glass and they're in other white countries, or whether we want to talk about like in academic settings, how like obviously having access to an educational institution is like a form of gatekeeping. So we do tend to see there's less black people in general in those institutions who are having access to like the funds to do research and that kind of stuff. So there are ways that this is still being enacted. And for me, from what I, you know, where I'm sort of at with it is that we're holding space outside of those ways to learn and to grow with this instrument and with all of these facets involved, so that we can actually say and actually acknowledge each other as the holders of that information, because I'm not just going to, I just realized my battery is getting pretty low on here. Basically acknowledging that who is holding the information and actually valuing that when it's coming from somebody who just, they are sharing their experience. They are sharing the experience of their family, or the experience that they have had personally. There's so many ways that this information has been passed down and that lives within people. And there's so many different black folk traditions that are informing what's going on with the banjo and the culture that surrounds it. So whether that's root workers, whether that's chefs, whether that's crafters, farmers, just, you know, people singing, church people, like there's so many ways that information is being stored. So that's part of what this project is accessing, is that we're tapping into a larger pool than what is quote unquote acknowledged in a lot of these folk settings or academic settings or historical settings. And that is what we're doing, is we're just acknowledging each other. We're acknowledging the wisdom that people do actually have. And that is like absolutely meant to create access and to create a different way of looking at and thinking of this that we can all really learn from. Like, is indigenous knowledge all something that is just written down? No, because we have different ways of sharing information. We have oral traditions. We have a different culture. So being able to just learn about that culture and embody it and just being present with each other in ways that are traditional is getting a lot done, and you know, getting that done in time, giving it time, allowing for it to develop. You know, we're in our fifth year of doing this project and I don't see it going anywhere. I'm like, we're building an institution, and you know, I'm really proud of us for doing that. I'm really just grateful for all the collaborators and the patience that we've all really exhibited and the ways that we're just creating that access. So like, whether that's just being willing to talk about that, to, you know, to create these platforms, to like, that's a lot of the offerings that we have available right now, is like, we just want to hold space to be able to hear the music, have resources to finding the music that we have access to, and having conversations where we can learn together. And part of that is just learning how to be in community with each other in ways that are, you know, happening.
Right. A kinfolk, if you will. And I'll add to that list, most non-Black folk know how to take public domain songs made by Black folk and own them, put them out, and make a profit. You know, cutting off again, what is that term? It's the term of generational wealth, cutting off generational wealth, you know. So last question, because I could talk to you all day. Is there anything I did not ask you that you either thought or you had hoped I'd ask?
You know, you definitely touched on a lot. I would say, I think the question that I would like to answer, maybe it's just like, what am I most excited about as far as this developing? And I think, yeah, I guess like the sort of question of like, what is like the future like for us? And yeah, I really am super excited for the future of what we're building, because I feel like we're still so new at this, and we're still, it's just such like a, there's still so many spaces that I have yet to step into. I want to find new ways of being in community. And that means for me, you know, collaborating to create different kinds of gatherings that we haven't made before, and finding deeper ways to connect with all of the pieces. Like for me, just in my own practice, like being able to work really deeply with animals, like being able to really work deeply with the life cycle process with the goats. And we've definitely had, I come from like a farming and herbalism background myself. And so like being able to just learn more from the gourds and the process of cultivating them has been huge and will continue. I think that California is a really difficult place to like, quote unquote, be a landowner or to steward land. But those are all goals that are still very much in place here that we're going to make happen. And just even having access to land that we can be in right relationship with, and as well as incorporating being in relationship with the indigenous people of the land that we're on. Having deeper relationships with the trees, like all of what we, as far as banjo building, I think we're all really excited about the prospect of sourcing, creating supply chains of these materials that are coming from Black and Indigenous people. And then that is then going back into our livelihood. And so we're actually creating that as like, there's that economic liberation that's happening as well as like, what does it mean to collectively or to cooperatively create something with other people? Whether that's a business, whether that's just a project, there's a lot of ways that like, that's not easy to do. It takes a lot of time, but I think that we're doing such foundational work, just creating more channels for our leadership to continue creating just shared understanding, having better communication, having more skills as facilitators. There's so many things that we're focusing on right now. And that's actually going to allow us to spread into like the different regions, because I do see us eventually having different bases in kind of the main regions of Turtle Island, as well as like, you know, being able to generate and sustain wealth. And like, I have literally this like unborn black baby inside my tummy that I'm just like, there's a whole other generation of people who can benefit from this, who are asking for that. And like, it's going to be so much different for them to not have to feel this question of like what they're reclaiming, or that they're having to find those things. There's so much that I'm still learning. Like, I'm always a student, and I always like, I value being able to share and learn at the same time. Like staying in my lane, acknowledging what it is that I do know and what it is that I don't know. Cause you don't have to know everything. And that's part of why collaboration is beautiful. Just being able to work with folks who really represent in their lane and they really know what they're talking about and can really pass that on. It's an honor to work with elders. It's an honor to work with people from different generations. And like I said, across the diaspora, everywhere from across Turtle Island to all the different cultures that we hold here, as well as the continent and like South America, like there's so much richness in what we're doing. And I think we're just taking it slow. I'm having to take it slow. I'm having a baby really soon, and I'm going to be taking some time to, you know, this is my first time doing this. I'm constantly learning. I also come from a birth work background. So there's so much that I have intertwined with this work that has to do with what it is that we're birthing, and to support people in their process of that too. Like if you are just familiar with the concept of a doula or, you know, a midwife, it's like, this is all traditional work. This is all work that once again comes from Black people, comes from that knowledge, and is tied to the earth. And it's just very culturally rooted. So yeah, it's a huge honor to just be able to be present in everything that's going on and trying to hold it, and also just to let it go, you know, let it flow through. And I really like look up to you in the ways that you have taken this work on to just create a platform for people to keep learning in this context, and have it available in writing, have it available through the oral tradition. Like there's so much that I look forward to, in the stillness of where I'm going to be. Like I'll be able to listen to the podcast, you know, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yes,
always great to engage. Like, it's not always going to be like, okay, like I'm out here, like with my tools, you know, like, whatever the case, there's so many different, like, that can be more masculine, that can be more feminine. I myself am non-binary. Like, we work with and support trans people. There's a lot of trans people who are part of the Black Banjo Reclamation Project, queer people, and as well as cis, hetero, you know, males and females as well. And we honor all of the people, and we hold that diversity. And it's like that question, like, how do you actually support Black people, and how do we support ourselves? Because we have to come at this from somewhat of a selfish level, because if you're not, you're kind of on some saviorism stuff. Mm. If you're not doing it for yourself, like, we don't need to be out here trying to save each other. So just continuing to center that, continue to center, you know, some really deep values, having integrity around the work and honoring the ancestors, continuing to say, wow, there's some really dope people and energies who have paved the way for this lead.
You still with me? There you go. There you go.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, you just kind of stopped and then now you came back. Well, I mean,
I apologize.
No, it's quite all right. But we got most of it, and I want to thank you. One, it's our honor, but I appreciate, and I've learned to accept blessings as such. So thank you. And it's our honor, and we'll continue to build and find ways to collaborate. I don't know what else to say, because this was just, it was really great, is what I anticipated. Folks, if you're just tuning in, you missed the great one, but it will be up soon on the website and on the many streaming services. I just spoke with Hannah Marie, okay? And what I really appreciated about this is, though we spoke about the banjo and singing, that's not what we spoke about. We spoke about the things that cultivate our culture, which allows us to pick up our instruments and express, if that makes any sense. So, good folks, you know what it is. It's Jack Dapper Blues. You come here to learn them blues about them blues people. And we have a blues person right here. I'm going to put here where to find her and the organization. That is her website. Instagram. It is also going to be when I put the post up. But I just want to, whoever's watching now, this is the Black Banjo Reclamation Project.org. Black Banjo Reclamation Project.org. And it's the same for their Instagram. The difference is black.banjo.reclamation. And of course, before the black, it is at, or the at sign. Signs and symbols, folks. That'll be another conversation. And you also took us through something that most people don't want to use, the acronym CRT. All of these things are connected. And we can talk about that another time. But I appreciate you. Audience, appreciate you. Y'all know where to find me. I know where to find y'all. Keep bluesing.